Our study continues in the 36th chapter of Ezekiel. We're beginning at the 16th verse. And in this portion of the chapter, he's showing more specifically why the people were taken into captivity and why specifically he has removed their captivity and brought them back to their land. Verse 16 says, "Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doings." So it was because of their way and their doings that God had taken them out of the land. They actually defiled the land. So that a country, a land, an area becomes really no better than the people who inhabit it. And God looks upon it this way. And even though this was the land of Israel, this was the land he'd promised to his people, the hills and the valleys may seem to have looked the same, but because of the doings of the people, the ways of the people, they had defiled it. They had defiled it by their own way and by their doings. And of course, any time we turn away from God, any time we turn to a way that is our own way, we know that it's not the way of God because the mind of man is not the same as the mind of God, then we are defiling the very ground upon which we stand. And consequently, nothing then is good, nothing is holy, nothing is pure, because our ways are polluting and defiling it. And of course, these people had polluted it and defiled it by idolatry and by the mistreatment of their fellow brethren. So they've defiled it by their own way and by their doings. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. This has reference to the fact that the law considered a woman who was having her menstrual flow to be unclean. And everything that she touched also became unclean and had to go through a time of purification. This is given in Leviticus, the 15th chapter, beginning with the 19th verse, and it spells out a lot of details about this. But God is comparing the people and their defilement to this condition, this situation. So he says that their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. The woman during this time was to be removed from the usual activities of society. Her husband wasn't to sleep with her. Everything that she sat upon or laid upon was to be considered unclean during this time. And so he just used this as a comparison. Israel, because of their sins, because of their doings, had defiled this land. They defiled it by their own way and by their doings. And so their way was just like the uncleanness of a removed woman. Verse 18, "Wherefore I poured my fury upon them." So God did allow them to be carried out of this land. He did allow them to be taken into captivity. He did allow them to be overthrown and to be obliterated as a nation. It was his fury that he poured upon them. And the reason is for the blood that they had shed upon the land and for their idols wherewith they had polluted it. So he gives two reasons here, primarily, as to why they were so displeasing to him. One was the blood that shed upon the land, that is, their mistreatment of their fellow man. And as we know, there are two great areas that man has to show love in and man has to show obedience in. One is the regard to his fellow man, and the other is the regard to God. In the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, the first four commandments have to do with man's duty to God. And the second table of the law, which are the second six commandments, have to do with man's duty to man. In the first four commandments, he forbids them to have any other gods before him, to make any graven image like in anything in heaven or that is in earth, and to bow down to it and serve it. He forbids them to take his name in vain, and he instructs them to keep the Sabbath day holy. Now, those are all duties of man to God. Then in the last six, he talks about such things as being giving honor to the father and the mother, to not commit adultery, not to steal, not to bear false witness, not to kill, not to covet, and so on. So we're talking about man's duty to man. So all the law and the prophets can be divided into these two great areas. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy mind, all thy soul, and all thy strength, as Jesus said. And the second is like unto it, to love thy neighbor as thyself. So here when we see these two great sins of Israel, we find that they're in violation of these two great categories. The first one is that they had shed blood upon the land. So they were not doing to their brother, to their neighbor as they should. They didn't love their neighbor like they should. They violated the part of the law that applied to the neighbor. And the second was that they had polluted it with their idols. They had built these graven images, and they had taken other gods before him, and they had violated the Sabbath and done all the things that they shouldn't do because of their idolatry. So certainly God had every kind of a reason. He was justified in what he did because of their great sin, because of their great crime. They'd polluted this land because of the blood they'd shed and because of the idols wherewith they'd polluted it. So the violation of either one of these areas is enough then to put us in disfavor with God. If we were to keep ourselves free from all the idolatry, but yet if we fail to follow the law of love, if we didn't love our neighbor as ourself, if we worked ill to our neighbor, then of course we violated God's law. Or if we should do everything in our power to try to love our brother, to try to do good to our brother, but yet if we allow idolatry to seep in, if we allow the things that are not of God to become a part of our worship, a part of our devotion, then here again we violated the rule of God. But in their case, they had done both. And it's difficult to not violate one of these areas without also violating the other area too. It's most difficult to do the things we need to do unto God and not to love our brother. And it's also most difficult to love our brother and not do the things we need to do unto God. So they usually go hand in hand, and we usually violate both areas as they had done. But it was because of this that he then poured his fury upon the people. Verse 19, "And I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the countries. According to their way and according to their doings, I judged them." So in this 19th verse, we see that it was a result of their having polluted the land with their idols and with their shedding of blood that God scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the countries. And we're talking about the carrying away into captivity of the northern and the southern kingdom, both Israel and Judea. And this happened over a long period of time. The northern kingdom had gone into captivity about 100 years before the southern kingdom. And so this is a result of their doing. He says it's according to their way and according to their doings I judge them. The people had asked for it. The people had lived and behaved and disobeyed God in such a way that this was their just due to have happened to them. It wasn't something that God had planned or God wanted or God was pleased with. It was something that was according to their way and according to their doings. I judge them. And we see here one of the rules of God that's repeated time and time again, that we set the pace for the kind of judgment, the kind of treatment, punishment, retribution we're going to receive. We're living under a just God. We're living under a God that's well aware of our innocence and our guilt. We're not living under a spiritual government that may punish the innocent or may let the guilty go free due to lack of understanding as to what the truth and reality is. God knows. And so it's going to be according to our way and according to our doings that we will be judged. If you want to be judged in a harsh manner, then you do the things that require harsh judgment. If you want to be judged in a manner in which you're going to be given life and victory and be rewarded for well-doing, then do things that are according to well-doing. And so this is what happened to Israel. Verse 20, "And when they entered unto the heathen, whither they went, they profaned my holy name, when they said unto them, These are the people of the Lord, and are gone forth out of his land." Now what happened is, not only had they polluted the land that God gave them, not only had they disobeyed God and violated his rules and put him to shame where they lived, but even after they were carried away into captivity, they continued to profane the holy name of God. They lived in such a way, they behaved in such a way, that the heathen then was given a way to criticize God, to profane his name, because these were supposed to be the people of God. The heathen looked at their ways, and they said unto them, "These are the people of the Lord, and are gone forth out of his land." when the heathen saw how depraved they were, how degraded they were, maybe in some areas of morality they were even worse than the heathen was, then this put the Lord to a shame. This was a way to profane his name even further. And we see that certainly God's people can, by living their own kinds of lives, by setting their own kind of an example, the people of God can profane his name. Paul refers to this very thing in Romans, the 2nd chapter, verse 24. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. So those that don't even know God can be caused to blaspheme his name when they see the people of God doing the wrong things. When they see the people of God living in such a way that they themselves know naturally is wrong. And when they see that the people of God do not truly honor and follow and obey their God. The heathen is more dedicated to his God many times than the child of the true and living God is dedicated to his God. And the heathen can see this. You don't fool anybody. You're not going to deceive these people. They know how devoted you are. They know whether or not you're really following what your convictions and what your beliefs are. They know if you say one thing and do something else that you're not consistent and that you're not really sincere in what you're believing. And so this causes then the name of God to be blasphemed. This causes his name to be profaned. And so it happened with this people. When they were carried into their various areas of captivity, their conduct there and their previous conduct coupled with it caused God's name to be polluted or profaned. And so they said unto them, these are the people of the Lord, and are gone forth out of his land. Verse 21, But I had pity for mine holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen, whither they went. Now because my name was being degraded, because my name was being profaned, everywhere you went, the things you did, and the previous life you had lived before your captivity was bringing about a shame to my name, then I took notice of this. And I had pity for mine holy name. It was my name that I was mostly concerned about here. Now, he calls his name mine holy name. And we have to understand that the things which are holy are valuable things. They are special things. And they are things that God takes great note of. And his name is one of those things. It's a holy name. He forbid his people to take his name in vain. He forbid his people to have any other gods before him. And so his name is a very important thing. He stated time and time again while they were planning to go into the land of Canaan that they were to do certain things when he had found the place where he'd chosen to put his name. And he's talking about the tabernacle and the articles of worship. And eventually his name then was planted in Jerusalem with the temple and the articles of worship there, the holy and the most holy place, and all of the duties of the priests. And so when we're talking about the name of God, then we're talking about something that's holy, something that's valuable, something that's very important, something that God takes note of. And if we take upon ourselves to wear the name of God, then we've taken it upon ourselves to uphold the dignity and the holiness of that name, which is going to be a very responsible thing. And if we do something to degrade his name, to make his name profaned or blasphemed, God takes note of it. And God takes action then to make a correction of that. So it was because of his holy name that he had pity on them. For mine holy name, which the house of Israel hath profaned among the heathen, whither they went. Degrading of the name of God is not something that God overlooks. He takes note of it. So he says in verse 22, Therefore say unto the house of Israel, Thus saith the Lord God, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for mine holy name's sake, which ye have profaned among the heathen, whither you went. So he's going to bring them out of the captivity, and the reason he's going to bring them out of the captivity is not for their sake. They'd already so sinned that they were justifiably in a state of captivity and could even be justifiably put to death for it, but he is going to bring them out of this land for his sake, for his holy name's sake, so that he can again find a way to glorify his name. Now this is made reference to by Moses in Deuteronomy the 32nd chapter when the very same subject is under discussion, and God says through Moses there, Deuteronomy 32 beginning with verse 26, I said I would scatter them into corners, I would make the remembrance of them to cease from among men, were it not that I feared the wrath of the enemy, lest their adversaries should behave themselves strangely, and lest they should say, Our hand is high, and the Lord hath not done all this. So it was out of fear of the fact that the enemy would no longer give God the glory and the credit for having performed these things, that he then didn't just make the remembrance of this people to cease from among men. This is why he brought them back. They were known as the people of God, and had they then just been ceased to be, then the heathen, the enemy, would say, well, the Lord didn't do this. He didn't have any power, any control over this, and so these people who claim to be his people no longer even exist. And so to preserve his name, to preserve the honor and glory of his holy name, then he says, I will bring them out. So he says, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for mine holy name's sake, which you have profaned among the heathen, whither you went. And he proceeds to discuss this in verse 23, And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which ye have profaned in the midst of them, and the heathen shall know that I am the Lord, saith the Lord God, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. So he states here emphatically in this 23rd verse, I will sanctify my great name. He's going to make his name holy. He's going to make his name sacred. He's going to sanctify it. And he calls it my great name. The things that are holy are also great things. And this is true of the name of God. His name is great. It has power. It is to be recognized, it is to be noted, it is to be honored, and God intends for this to happen. Now this is the same idea that we hear our Savior say in John 12, verse 28, when he says, Father, glorify thy name. Then came there a voice from heaven saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. So we see that even in the New Testament now, God still has this same idea, this same purpose of glorifying his name. He has glorified it, and he will glorify it again. And so it behooves us who wear his name, who claim to be his children, members of his family, members of his household, it behooves us to uphold the honor and the dignity of his great name. When we see somebody misusing his name, then this should make us wince. It should make us feel very badly, because the honor of God's name, the holiness of it, the glorification of it is not being upheld. And it's going to be our job then to assist in the glorifying of this name of God. And so he says this in this 23rd verse. He wants to sanctify his name, the name which was profaned among the heathen, which you profaned in the midst of them. And then he says, And the heathen shall know that I am the Lord, saith the Lord God, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. It's the act of the child of God being sanctified before the eyes of the heathen, being sanctified in his people. He wants his people to recognize his name, to glorify his name, and to live in such a way that the people who are round about can observe them and see the glory of God in their lives. So it's not going to be just the bringing back of the people to Israel that will glorify his name. Sure, that's going to be a big part of it, but the ultimate way that the heathen are going to know that this is the true God, the ultimate way that they're going to know that he is the Lord, is when he's sanctified in his people before their eyes. When they can look and see the people of God right there before their eyes, demonstrating that they are following the true and living God, that they are inspired by, and they are influenced by, and they are molded by this God so that they live a life that's a godly life, then that will cause them to know that I am the Lord. Now this is a very, very great statement. It's a very great principle. It applies to us today so that everything that we do should be something that cannot be misconstrued at all by the heathen into thinking that we're not faithful, into thinking that we are not a true child of the living God. Every act that we perform, every thought that we think should be in the direction of being faithful and obedient to God. Because there's no way you can get around the fact, if you claim to believe something, if you teach something, but yet if you act in a way that's not consistent with that, the heathen's going to pick it up right away and know that you're not sincere, you're not genuine. And if you're not sincere, then this becomes a reflection upon God because you're wearing his name. You claim to be influenced by and to be a believer in, a lover of, a follower of this God, and yet if you don't do the things this God says, then you're not genuine. And so it makes then the whole thing seem to be a sham. And it's a slam upon the name of God. It is a profanation, a blasphemy of His name. But just the opposite occurs. If you are genuine, if you do the things that you know to be right, if you live the kind of a life that you teach others to live, if you set the right kind of an example, then they're going to glorify God because you are a true example of the believers. In Philippians 3, verse 17, the Apostle Paul says, "Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so, as ye have us for an ensample." So Paul lived the kind of a life that was an ensample to the others. They could follow him because he was a true ensample. Now this word ensample actually means a type, or it is a true representation of what a believer should be. It's not just that Paul is saying, this is what you do, but he's also saying, I'm showing you how to do it. I'm showing you what a believer is. Again, we have this taught in 1 Peter 5, verse 3, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock. The elders, the bishops, were to be not just rulers, but they were to be samples to the flock. They were to be an example to show the flock how to live. And so this being an example on the part of the people then glorifies the name of God because it means you're genuinely following the true God. And verse 24 says, "For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land." So he's referring very plainly here to the coming back, to the coming back to Jerusalem, coming back and rebuilding the walls of the city, the walls of the temple, and reestablishing the nation, the worship, and this people of God. And the main purpose of all this was to glorify His name when the heathen should see what this people did. And this same great principle holds true for us today. We're to glorify His name in all that we do. So we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.